shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
The Herald of Truth broadcast is on the air, a program of spirit and truth dedicated to teaching the way of God more perfectly. These broadcasts contain keys to help unlock knowledge and reveal hidden truths of the Bible in these last days. Christians called to a higher level of understanding will be given Bible-based solutions to their personal as well as national problems. They will want to find out more about their part in God's plan. Our mailing address is Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, and will be given again at the end of this broadcast.
My name is Robert Wangrove. Now, the topic for today is, who are citizens of the United States? Under the original Constitution for the United States of America, did our forefathers establish only one race or one nation to be citizens of that nation and to hold the reins of power and to govern by those reins of power this nation known as the United States of America? Well, we have to go in and we have to seek out what evidence we can find that this nation was established by our forefathers and that it was only established for one nation to govern. We can go back into the Federalist Papers by Hamilton, Madison, and Jay, and we begin to get some insight as to what was the intent or the letter and spirit of the original Constitution. As these papers were circulated amongst the people at that time to explain the new Constitution to them before they either approved or rejected it. Now here's what Jay had to say, and this would be in the Federalist Papers by Clinton Rossiter, which is the copy I believe the United States Supreme Court uses. And on page 38, under number 2, we read this by Jay. With equal pleasure, I have as often taken notice that Providence has been pleased to give this one connected country to one united people, a people descended from the same ancestors, speaking the same language, professing the same religion, attached to the same principles of government, very familiar in their manners and customs, and who by their joint counsel, arms, and efforts, fighting side by side throughout a long and bloody war, have nobly established their general liberty and independence. Now, you want to remember that the preamble of the Constitution of the United States starts out with the words, we the people. It does not begin with words, we the peoples, in the plural. Therefore, there was no intention of establishing anything but one nation under one race from the very beginning of the establishment of the United States Constitution. Even as we go back into the Declaration of Independence, where it says, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should be declared the causes which impel them to separation. Now, what did Jefferson, who is credited with penning the Declaration of Independence, mean when he said, when or one people? Well, if you go back and you check the laws of Congress, and as you go into the laws of Congress at that time, we'll establish only those of the white race could work for the government. Only those of the white race could carry the mail. They passed the First Naturalization Act, which said that only an alien who was a free white person could be a citizen of the United States. Who penned the First Naturalization Act? This is information people today don't generally have, but it was Thomas Jefferson. He wrote the first bill for an act for naturalization to be approved by the Congress of the United States. And in that act, it establishes very clearly that only those of the white race can even apply to be a citizen of this new nation. And it also goes in and says that only after they have been naturalized in a state court having common law jurisdiction are they then considered a citizen of the United States. Now you have to understand that the term citizen of the United States at that time was not a physical citizenship. It was merely a term that was referred to those who had obtained state citizenship under the state's naturalization laws, which the states were only naturalizing those of the white race to be citizens of the state. Once they had accomplished this, any alien that had been naturalized by the state was then only considered a citizen of the United States because of his state citizenship. So I don't think there's very much doubt about what Jefferson meant when he wrote the Declaration of Independence, when he said, for one people. For he later, in the bills and acts and one thing and another he wrote for the approval of Congress, did establish that only those of the white race could even hope to become a citizen of this nation. Now, under this understanding of the U.S. Constitution, under the letter and spirit of the Constitution, it was impossible for the conspirators to even try to disinherit these people. They couldn't even become citizens of the United States. And if they could not become citizens of the United States, they could not become citizens of a state. And if they could not become citizens of the United States, they could not run for elective office, they could not vote, they could not hold land, they could not do anything in this country that a citizen could do. It made it absolutely impossible for them to get in and pervert the laws or pervert the letter and spirit of the original Constitution. These conspirators began to put forth the idea that the original body politic, which was all free white, formed by the Statute of 1776, which meant the Declaration of Independence, included men of all races, and that America was a melting pot of all races of the world. The conspirators began their campaign of lies by constantly referring to the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, wherein it says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." This was consistently put before the eyes and the ears of the posterity until the posterity began to believe that the Declaration of Independence began with the second paragraph. Since most modern-day people are too lazy to check authorities out for themselves, most Americans today don't even know there is a first paragraph to the Declaration of Independence. They, by pure assumption, believe the Declaration begins at the second paragraph. But what was Jefferson referring to, and what was the accepted understanding of that second paragraph to the Declaration of Independence? Today they try to tell you that the statement in the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence seemed to embrace the whole human family. And if they were used in a similar instrument at this day, it would be so understood. But it is too clear for dispute that the enslaved African race were not intended to be included and formed no part of the people who framed and adopted this declaration. The men who framed this declaration were great men, high in literacy, acquirements, and high in their sense of honor, and incapable of asserting principles inconsistent with those on which they were acting. They perfectly understood the meaning of the language they used and how it would not in any part of the civilized world be supposed to embrace the Negro race, which by common consent had been excluded from the civilized governments and the family of nations and doomed to slavery. They spoke and acted according to the then established doctrines and principles in the ordinary language of the day, and no one could have misunderstood them. I mean, let's be reasonable about all of this. How are you going to establish a nation under Christian principle, which was fully the intent? And then you have Jews who are anti-Christ, Buddhist, atheist, Darwinism people, all being elected to the government, all putting in bills to pervert our laws, and then still expect to maintain a nation under Christian principle. I mean, it's ludicrous. It's absolutely stupid. There's absolutely no way you're going to maintain a nation under Christian principles if you are going to allow all of these people to get into government, get into places of position, and being able to pervert our Christian laws to suit themselves. I cannot understand the Christian community of this nation, which is still in power, can even conceivably vote for anyone who is not of their race and not of the Christian faith. I mean, there's absolutely no way you're going to maintain a Christian nation any other way. If we don't go back to the one race concept, this nation is lost. I mean, we in this nation do have an obligation to secure the blessings of liberty and peace and tranquility to our posterity, which is our children and our grandchildren. And if we don't wake up soon, they're going to be struggling and fighting for land, jobs, even their very existence. The conspirators that want to destroy this concept that our forefathers put before us want to dispossess our posterity. And they will do so if we do not act and we do not do what we need to do to straighten this up. What we're talking about and what we have been talking about is not merely the establishment of a citizenry of a nation, but of a birthright. And we all know the story of Esau, who rejected the birthright God had granted to him. And we know the story that Esau learned to regret that very bitterly. And we are going to find the same bitterness in our children and in ourselves if we do not stand up for our birthright and reestablish it and put it back into power to govern this nation once more. Other than that, our children one day will come to spit upon our graves where we did nothing to establish their birthright and to protect their rights to their land under their birthright. A birthright cannot be taken away by the establishment of law. A birthright can be taken away by the act of a foreign aggressor in a combat situation where we would lose and they would destroy us. Or a birthright can be surrendered voluntarily by those who possess it, as Esau did. But a birthright cannot be taken from us by force of any law. The enemies of the foundation of our Constitution that was established by our founding fathers know full well that this country could not be taken by force. They also know that no law will establish their taking of our birthright away from us. So their entire plan was to deceive us and to get us to voluntarily surrender our birthright and to disgrace ourselves before our God and to surrender the rights and liberties of our posterity into the hands of these people who wish to destroy that birthright and to take our nation away from us. Was America established as a Christian nation? I'll read to you a case called Runkle versus Weinmiller. It's a Michigan case that was done in 1799. And here's a quote of the court. The Christian religion is the established religion by our form of government and all denominations placed on an equal footing and equally entitled to protection and their religious liberty. Now, what is he talking about that we are known as a Christian religion or a Christian nation by our form of government? Well, if we review the government of our God, it is in three sections. It is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. If you've ever noticed that the United States Constitution and the state constitutions are all split into three parts, the legislative, the judicial, and the executive. This was their concept of how to bring God's government down here upon the earth and to establish it as the government of the Christian nation known as America. This was even noted in the case of ex-party Reynolds, ETAL, federal case number 11720, where it was stated by the court, and it was talking about how to implement the 14th Amendment in upon the states. Listen to what he says. It is conceded that this inhibition applies exclusively to the states, talking about 14th Amendment. But that term presents a complex idea. A state is a sort of a trinity. It exists, acts, and speaks in three capacities: legislative, executive, and judicial. What is forbidden to it in one capacity is forbidden to it in each and all. It may not infringe this article by legislation, but it may equally do so by its courts or its executive authorities. I give you the words of the Chief Justice John Marshall, who wrote, "It would be strange indeed if with such a people our institutions did not profess the Christianity and did not often refer to it and exhibit relations with it." Then you have the case of Updegraff versus the Commonwealth in 1824, where the court in Pennsylvania said, "Christianity, general Christianity, is and always has been a part of the common law of Pennsylvania. Not Christianity with an established church, tithes, and spiritual courts, but Christianity with liberty of conscience to all men." And it is not by birth alone that you can claim citizenry to the United States of America. As was noted in a famous case of Amy versus Smith, it was said this: "The American colonies brought with them the common and not the civil law, and each state at the Revolution adopted either more or less of it, and not one of them explored the principle that the place of birth conferred citizenship. Hence, I conclude that every white person, at least born within the United States, whether male or female, is by birth a citizen within the meaning of our Constitution, and as such has rights secured by it." What he meant there, that if you were white, and he says white, was the only way that by right of birth you could claim to be a citizen of a state and thereby a citizen of the United States. This was the law under the original Constitution for the United States of America, and this was the law under the state constitutions of the United States of America. The one principle our courts have forgotten today, you'll find in Maddox versus the U.S., wherein they said, "We are bound to interpret the Constitution in the light of the law as it existed at the time it was adopted." That means that the courts today are no longer following this maxim of law. They are doing everything they can today to destroy the original body politic that was formed, that created the government by creating the Constitution of the United States. A lot of people will run around and they try to say they are a sovereign individual or a sovereign citizen. There is but one sovereign, and that is God Almighty Himself. The only way the people are sovereign over the government is when they are reestablished back into that body politic that established the government to begin with. That body politic was composed of only free white men and Christians. There was no other entity that was involved in that body politic. If we do not reestablish that body politic and put it back into power, we cannot command the government obey any of the original articles of the U.S. Constitution. And this is what the Antichrist people want, is to keep that body politic from reforming, to be reestablished, because they know that they are the ones and the only ones who have real power to limit this government and put it back on its constitutional axis under the original letter and spirit of the Constitution of the United States. Now the question is, when the body politic, the free white body politic, had done its job and it had come together and approved and adopted the Constitution of the United States, is that the end of their power? was their power to cease when they no longer were in existence in that body? No, their power did not cease. Their power was exercised in the jury system. As jurors, they were there to ensure that the government obeyed all of the limitations that were placed upon them by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and that the government would not disobey those limitations. That is where the people retained the power to govern the government and to ensure that the government would not go astray and that the government would not become a power above them. But then again, only free white males were allowed to be jurors under the Constitution. And they had the power in their hands to determine both the law and the facts when they judged a case. And should they judge that the government had not followed the law, they were perfectly able to declare that the government had violated the Constitution and release anyone that the government had not proceeded on in a correct manner, according to the limitations of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And it was not an uncommon practice that the scriptures were quoted in the open courtroom, and that any law that was deemed to be unjust was compared to the scriptures, and a determination was made as to whether the law had followed the Christian principles, or that if the law was against the Christian principles and could be rejected by those juries. Today you hear them telling us about the separation of church and state. Under the original letter and spirit of the state and the United States Constitution, when it comes to the states, there was no separation of church and state. If you review the history of the states, you will find that they declared the state to be a Protestant state. The officials today would just go bonkers over such a declaration by a state today. But the First Amendment to the Constitution did not limit them, the states, to any separation of religion and state. The separation was religion and the United States. It was the United States Congress who was limited that they could not profess to be, say, a Protestant doctrine in Congress, because Congress was composed of all the different sects of Christian religions in all the states, and therefore for the Congress to declare that it was of the Protestant doctrine would cause an enormous amount of jealousy and suspicion among the other representatives of the other states who had declared in their state a different sect of Christian doctrine. So there was no separation of church and state, but there was a separation of church and United States. Of course, those of the Antichrist persuasion want to turn everything around and distort all of the true meanings of the Constitution and the concept of a Christian nation. Of course, that would certainly put a kink in their plans. But it is true, nevertheless, that America was established for only one race to govern, and it was established as a Christian nation. We'll go into that matter of just exactly how these Antichrist people came in and got into power, and how they are attempting today to destroy every vestige of our nation under our laws of the original letter and spirit of the United States Constitution. What went wrong with America? Where did we go wrong? Where did we make a bad turn that has placed us in the position that we are in today, and that we are facing the one world government, and it is breathing down our necks with its hot breath? And how did we come to this impasse by disobeying our God and the laws of which He established, and that we were to maintain and to establish His light in this world? And we need to understand what we need to do to get back to understanding what our mission is and what our God wants us to do. We have established who is a citizen of America, and we have established that only those of one race were established as citizens, and that this is a Christian nation. Now, when you start talking like this, a lot of people start yelling, the Antichrist people, that you're a bigot, or you're a racist, or you're a Nazi, or you're any one of these numerous things that they can pull out of their arsenal to come at you and try to get people to believe that you're one of these things. Well, all of this is untrue. Simply because we want to reestablish and bring America back within the concept of what our God has mandated that we do. We want to be an example up onto the world. We were to obey God's law because we are the chosen people, the Israelite people, and that we are to maintain His laws to show the rest of the world that this is the best system in which we can live our lives and dedicate ourselves to our God, and to establish amongst the world the light that is necessarily necessary for them to see that the Christian faith and the Christian religion is the absolute way to live your life and to become one with our God and to establish His laws upon the face of this earth. That has nothing to do with white supremacy. That has everything to do with being God's instrument to bring light upon the world, that it is His laws that are just, and it is His laws that we should live by, and that we will prosper and remain free and at liberty as long as we do. Oh, in other words, we were to be a light upon the world to show them that the Christian faith and the Christian religion and the Christian God is the only way that we can maintain a true existence in perfect harmony with ourselves and with our God. These people who yell bigot and Nazi and all the rest of it, why, you know, we can just listen to that with a deaf ear. We have to go on if we're going to understand exactly what our purpose is, and well, we are to fulfill God's laws by maintaining them. And those that don't like it, well, are just those people who don't like it. And I'm not real concerned about those people. I am concerned that my brethren of my race at least examine exactly what the letter and spirit of the Constitution was in light of what God has commanded us, and to come back within that light and to reestablish this nation as a light unto the world and to lead this world back to God's laws and God's grace as we were commanded to do. We are the keepers of the law, and if we will not keep the law, there isn't anyone else on this earth that is going to keep the law. So we have to maintain that we will keep the law, and we can only do that if we understand it. Now, America and the body politic, the free white body politic of America, started to slide downhill with the election of Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln was the worst rat that ever got into the presidency of the United States government. He was a liar. He said a lot of things people wanted to hear, but there were a few things that people never did hear that were never really fully publicized. I have a publication before me. It says Publications of the American Jewish Historical Society, number 17. Now, in this publication, which is written by Isaac Markens, M-A-R-K-E-N-S, you find this statement. He also protested against his entertainment while passing through Cincinnati on his way to Washington. Later on, his administration for Lincoln was unbound. In the course of an address following the president's death, published in the Cincinnati Commercial of April the 20th, 1865, he thus attempted to prove he was one of the chosen people. Here's a statement he says Lincoln made. Abraham Lincoln believed himself to be born bone of our bone and flesh of our flesh. He supposed himself to be of Hebrew parentage. He said so in my presence, and indeed he possessed the common features of the Hebrew race, both in countenance and in features. Now that's quite a statement. Number one, the Hebrews were not Jews. But if you take a good close look at Lincoln, he does look like the descendant of Cain. He has those features. What was it that Lincoln did? What he did, he drove the wedge between our brethren and ourselves. He divided the free white people, he divided the body politic which was formed, and he actually got them to engage in the most bloody civil war the world has ever known. All of this Abraham Lincoln accomplished. And every president since Lincoln has tried to institute all of Lincoln's idea of mixture of the races, mixture of the citizenship, and all of it has a single and same purpose: to destroy the birthright inheritors of this land and the birthright citizens of this nation. A vast majority of people of that time were deceived by Lincoln. They were totally in the dark as to what he was truly advocating. And a lot of these people had lost the concept of the original intent of the Constitution and the original intent of the Christian faith. They had fallen into disorder, and they had started to follow a false prophet that dazzled them every time he spoke. The Antichrist dominions had gone amongst the people and had totally deceived them by this time, at least a great majority of them. And the people were totally submersed in the new definition of the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence and were totally deceived. During Lincoln's administration is when the ugly head of Judeo-Christians started to emerge, where they were perverting the Bible. And they were taking these perversions of the Bible to the people to get them to dishonor the laws that their God had laid down before them. And that they had actually taken up arms to kill brother against brother in a civil war that should have never have happened. The southern states were fighting for the original letter and spirit of the Constitution. They were called to arms rather than disregard the principles of the Christian faith and the intent of the United States Constitution as it was originally written. And the people of the South were right. Now that we have had a few generations pass by since the Civil War, even the people in the North are beginning to see the system that Abraham Lincoln began on that fateful day. President after president has followed the philosophies and the interpretations of the Constitution made by Abraham Lincoln, and today we have the mess that we sit in. We have lost our government. It has become a power over the people. And all of this is due to the teachings of Abraham Lincoln and those who have followed after him in the succeeding generations. Now let's go into some of the trickery that was employed to get the Antichrist people into power, into our government, to change our laws. A Congress of the United States began to propose amendments to the U.S. Constitution. And the states were now filled with these people that had followed Abraham Lincoln. And they had no problem passing the 13th, and the 14th, and the 15th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution. The 13th Amendment supposedly freed the slaves. But that just wasn't enough for these Antichrist followers of Lincoln. They also had to advocate and pass the 14th Amendment, which their claim is added to the citizenry of the United States. The 14th Amendment actually creates a physical citizenship, a power the Congress of the United States has never possessed. Congress has never possessed the power to create a physical citizenship. The only power in the original Constitution that Congress was allowed was to set a uniform rule of naturalization. And that unified rule of naturalization had to be according to what the states dictated as a majority of who could be a citizen. And most people believed back then that the 14th Amendment was passed only to enable the people of African descent to become citizens of the United States. Well, the Antichrist people knew much better. They knew that once they could get the 14th Amendment established as an amendment to the Constitution of the United States, that they too then could assume the reins of power by being elected as representatives of the people and allowing them to get into our government in positions of senators and congressmen, where they could rewrite our laws and destroy our Christian laws by the rewriting. And the 14th Amendment is what enabled them to do this. To set the theme of the 14th Amendment, I want to read you this out of Psalms 83. Verse 3 and 4, they have taken crafty counsel against thy people and consulted against thy hidden ones And they have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. Well, this is exactly what they're trying to do to us. They are trying to homogenize our race. They are trying to cut us off from our birthright and the laws that we can claim that have power over this government to limit them in all that they do. They are trying to do away with all of our laws, to do away with the Constitution, and to virtually give us a brand new Constitution to where we have no power, and we have no status, and we have no say in what goes on. But again, we are brought back to the letter and spirit and the intent of the founders of the United States Constitution and the founders of the state constitutions. In a little bit of study, we can dispel all of this and know that it is all smoke and mirrors. In Maddox versus U.S., the court stated that we are bound to interpret the Constitution in the light of the law as it existed at the time it was adopted. This is exactly what our people need to learn again, is what was the light of the law when it existed at the time it was adopted. There was no provision under the amending Article 5 of the Constitution or anywhere else in the Constitution for the United States Congress to create a federal citizenship. That does not exist under the original Constitution. A little more information into how the 14th Amendment really works and under what jurisdiction they have placed all of these people that you find under the 14th Amendment. Right after the 14th Amendment had been secured and passed, the Congress of the United States created what they called the Freedmen's Bureau. Now, under the Freedmen's Bureau, they had imposed a martial law jurisdiction that protected all of those who were placed under this new federal citizenship. It was actually run by and enforced by military officers. There's no doubt that the 14th Amendment was the beginning of martial law jurisdiction being imposed upon the people of the United States. But the white people were not yet subject to this martial law jurisdiction. They had to very carefully alter the laws and alter the thinking of the people before they could place them under a martial law jurisdiction, and they were hoping to do it in secrecy. And they did. The people were dumbed down until they didn't understand the law anymore. Then you find between 1920 and 1930, there was a great transition from common law being the law of the land to statutory law under a martial law jurisdiction being the law of the land. And in 1935, they consummated the plan to place everyone under martial law by the Social Security Act. The Social Security Act is a statute under a martial law venue and a martial law jurisdiction. This is how they finally brought the white man under one of the three forms of martial law. I mean, you've heard them say it time and time again. We are all equal under the law. But they are not telling you what law we are all equal under. And I'll guarantee you it is martial law. There's another violation of God's law that we have done, and you find it in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 9. Only take heed to thyself, and keep thy soul diligently, lest thou forget the things which thine eyes have seen, and lest they depart from thy heart all the days of thy life, but teach them to thy sons and to thy sons' sons. Well, this hasn't been done. The old teaching of the original intent of the Constitution has not been passed on from father to son, from father to son down through the generations. And the Antichrist people saw an opportunity to have it removed from the curriculum in our schools. So what we have today is a whole generation of young folks that have absolutely no idea what the Constitution says, what its intent are, and are merely taught socialist garbage, to train to be socialists, to act like socialists, and to think like socialists. And we have to go back and re-instruct our sons as to the true law in the history of this nation. What have they done under the Social Security Act? If you do a little research, you will find that the 10 federal regional areas were established by and through the Social Security Act. Now, what were these regional areas? What is the venue? And by knowing what the venue is, you would understand and know what the jurisdiction is. These regional areas are military venues. They cover the entire United States. This is what gave Congress the ability, in their opinion anyway, to reorganize all the agencies of the federal government and to start restructuring them into a martial law structure under martial law. And I went back and I studied Nazi Germany and I studied Stalin's Russia. And I found out they were both martial law regimes. That's the law that they had converted these countries to. But under martial law, I found a distinct structure that is the same. The first thing they did was they created 10 federal regional areas. Then they created 10 national areas. And then they converted all of the states to police states or provisional governments. And that was true in Nazi Germany under Hitler, and that was true under Stalin's communist Russia. They both adopted the same system. Now, in America, the Social Security Act has created 10 federal regional areas. If you examine the zip code, you will find we have 10 national areas. And I guarantee you, I can prove that they have been converting the states to provisional governments. And we have to open our eyes to this structure because it is the structure of things that show us what they are perverting and converting our supreme law to. Studying structure will establish all that I have said is true. I mean, you merely have to turn on your TV set or look in a book and you will find that the state's officials are allowing the states to come under state regional areas. Well, this would all be compatible to the federal martial law rule that the states also possess a martial law jurisdiction, a military jurisdiction. Every state does. Every state's governor is a commander-in-chief. So you know that they have a military jurisdiction. The treason has extended from the halls of Congress to the halls of the state legislators, and they are all in cahoots to bring about this martial law jurisdiction, and to govern the people of this nation under that law. Let me read you a statement out of the Micropedia 15th edition of 1989. Although temporarily, in theory, a state of martial law may in fact continue indefinitely. That's the new Encyclopedia Britannica, Volume 7. Let me now read you under Duncan versus Kamayuko, Hawaii. It's a case in the Hawaiian Islands where it says, the term martial law carries no precise meaning and has been employed in various ways by different people at different times. In other words, martial law has no set rules. They can make it up as they go along. And isn't that exactly what's been going on with Congress? They are making up the laws as they go along with no consideration of the limitations placed upon them by the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. Further evidence that we are a nation that is being governed under the martial law jurisdiction is take a look at your local police force. Do they have captains, lieutenants, quartermasters? Do they call us civilians? Are they receiving mostly military training? Look in your state statutes under the term peace officer, whereby they have claimed to have combined the city, county, and state police into one force under the term peace officer. Well, what could that one force be? The Boy Scouts? No, but it is the military police of the state. You see, if the legislators are passing statutory law under a military jurisdiction, then a sheriff or a city policeman in that capacity could not issue a citation for a violation of a statute under martial law. But if he was the military police, then he could issue the citation that the legislators have passed under their military jurisdiction. And that's exactly how that works. Even the income tax is under a military jurisdiction. What they have done is they have created districts within these regional areas, within these military venues, and that is exactly how they collect the income tax. They collect the income tax. That's what makes the IRS so powerful, as they are operating out of a military venue and imposing a martial law jurisdiction. They had a problem, is why the zip code came into being, is the IRS cannot send process under a military venue into the civil jurisdiction of a state, because every state has an article that says that the military will be strictly subservient to the civil power. So the IRS had the zip code created, which is another military venue, so that when they send you their process and you receive it, and it has a zip code on the address, and you open it, where did you open that letter? Did you open that letter in the civil jurisdiction of the state, or did you open that letter in a military venue known as the zip code? Now, they can send their process from one military venue to another military venue without violating the constitutional bar that is in every state constitution that the military power will be subverted to the civil power. That's how they're getting around it. Opening those letters and not returning them promptly in a proper fashion is where the people are accepting the venue of martial law when they receive something from an agency that is operating out of a military venue. I've read just about all the books that people have written on what is and what is not constitutional money. And I find that they have all made the same basic mistake. They all start out by saying that Article 1, Section 8, Clause 5 of the U.S. Constitution only allows for silver and gold coin to be the money established as legal tender by the United States government, which is all very true. But the point that they have all missed is the point that there is another legal tender that is provided in the Constitution that they have totally ignored, or they have just simply not known what it is. Everybody is all upset and excited about Federal Reserve notes, that they are interest-bearing, that they create money out of thin air, that the Federal Reserve Board is unconstitutional, and it goes on and on and on. But what is a Federal Reserve note? What is the other legal tender of the United States? The other legal tender of the United States, and has always been a legal tender, is called military scrip. Military scrip has always been a legal tender of the United States. So I've been teaching you how they've been setting up these two Pacific military venues. One military venue was the 10 federal regional areas, and the other military venue was the 10 national areas, which is represented by the zip code. Now, when you take into consideration what military scrip is, and that it is a legal tender, the problem they had circulating military scrip throughout the United States was that the military scrip can only be circulated in a military venue. Now, such as a military base would be a military venue, which military scrip could lawfully be circulated within its boundaries. But now that I have taught you that these 10 federal regional areas and the national areas represented by the zip code are a military venue, which does cover the entire United States, then they have to be circulating this military scrip throughout the United States within those military venues, where they would have not one ounce of authority to circulate military scrip within the civil jurisdiction of a state. Now, it's really hard for people to understand and comprehend that the military venues that were established by the Social Security Act and then later by the zip code do not, in their lawful makeup, have any states within their boundaries. There are no states in a military venue. If you go and study the cases on martial law, when a military commander comes into town, the first thing he does is set up the area in which he is in command of in a region. And then he sets up districts within those regions. Now, the districts usually have a certain purpose. Like, there is a taxing district within a regional area. And this is exactly what the President of the United States, as in his capacity as Commander-in-Chief, has done. He has set up
taxing districts within regional areas. And thereby the American people have been put under a most vicious form of taxation under a military venue, and it is enforced by a martial law jurisdiction. Now the money issue goes all the way back to the Civil War period. There was a case called Juilliard versus Green, whereby they began to circulate, under full martial law, they began to circulate what they referred to as United States Treasury bills. Now these United States Treasury bills had on them that they were redeemable in silver and gold coin. But the one fact that people have not taken into consideration is this, that even though these treasury bills, or United States notes as they were referred to, would redeem in silver and gold coin, they were still military scrip. They were paper. And the people were shouted down who objected to these paper money, to these military scrip. But they said, well, it was not within the Christian doctrine to issue paper money. And they were right. But you see, because they had made them redeemable in silver and gold coin, these people got shouted down, these Christians, who knew better. And the people accepted this paper money and hardly ever turned it in for the silver and gold content that it said that it would be redeemable in. Well, they got very used to using this paper money. And then the government just slowly but surely, by statute after statute under a martial law jurisdiction, took all the redeeming qualities in silver and gold out of these notes. And before long, what you had left was what would they refer to as a Federal Reserve note, which is not redeemable in anything. Now, the argument rages back and forth across America that these are interest-bearing, that they create this whole system out of nothing, which is not true. They even claim that these legal tender notes do not discharge debt. But they're wrong. They do discharge debt. But they also carry with it all of the Jewish interest schemes to wreak the money out of a man's pocket by the charging of interest. Now, there can be no interest charged on a silver or gold coin. But under this military jurisdiction and under this legal tender of a Federal Reserve note, you have to remember that the definition of under martial law is it is no law, which means they can break all of the Christian taboos. They can make it interest bearing at astronomical rates. And they can devastate you even in the purchase of a home, and make you pay at least three times what that home was actually worth under their interest system, under a military script, under martial law. Now let's go back to Juilliard versus Green, which is a United States Supreme Court case, wherein the statement is made that these notes, these United States notes, were authorized under the War Powers. Anything authorized under the war power, ladies and gentlemen, is martial law. For martial law is the only law that is exercised under any war power. And this is a point most of these writers on the money issue have made. They have gone off into a area of the law to describe these things and the unconstitutionality of it, and they have missed the point, and a very big point, about what is a legal tender of the United States. Now, when the courts refer to Federal Reserve notes, all they ever do is claim it is a legal tender. And they are right. What they are not doing is telling you how Federal Reserve notes are a legal tender. The only thing that anyone has heard from the courts is that the Federal Reserve notes are a legal tender, and nobody has known enough to get in the court's face and say, well, just how is a Federal Reserve note a legal tender of the United States? Everybody wants the Federal Reserve Board gone. Everybody thinks the Federal Reserve Board is a corporation, which is not true. The member banks of the Federal Reserve are corporations. The Federal Reserve itself is not a corporation. I mean, if we don't get our argument straight on this, we are never going to succeed at unwinding this money issue and pinning the courts down to exactly what type of legal tender are we talking about. To destroy the Federal Reserve, you merely have to do is to destroy the venues that the Federal Reserve notes circulate in. You have to destroy the 10 federal regional areas, and you have to destroy the 10 national areas, the zip code. If you destroy those two venues, the Federal Reserve could not circulate one paper dollar within the boundaries of a state. If you get rid of those two military venues, there will be nothing left except the civil jurisdictional venue of a state. That's the venue they cannot circulate military script in. They would be forced to go back and circulate it only within a military venue, which would be a military base or some other military installation. But as far as circulating Federal Reserve notes of any denomination or clad coin, they would no longer be able to do that. They would have to go back to silver and gold coin and circulate that amongst the federal states. Now, I know that would be pretty devastating financially for a lot of folks, but I'm reminded in the Bible about the Israelites who had gone into a strange land and they had taken strange wives and they had accumulated wealth and they had accumulated goods. And when they found out that they had disobeyed their God, what they did is they assembled and piled all the goods that they had taken from that system in one big pile. They had assembled the wives, they had assembled the children, and stood them in the pile, and they turned away and they walked away. And they reestablished themselves again within their own race, within their own nation, and started all over again. And that very well may be what's going to happen to us, and that may very well be what our God has in mind for us, is to devastate this system and start all over again and start clean and fresh and with understanding as to how we are to conduct ourselves and under what system we are to do that under, and to no longer allow these Antichrist people to bring us astray into these Antichrist systems. We must destroy these systems, and we must do it now.
We pray that your spiritual ears have received today's message, and that you were fed with strong meat relevant to solving the needs of our nation and Christian civilization everywhere. Herald of Truth is sponsored by Kingdom Identity Ministries through the financial support and prayers of listeners like you who love the truth of God's Word and want to see it broadcast throughout the land to awaken His people. If you would like a CD of today's message, tell us the date and station to which you are listening and send a donation to cover our cost plus help with radio time to Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas 72602. We would appreciate donations made by our international listeners to be in U.S. funds. For a free introductory packet of information, including our doctrinal statement of beliefs, plus lists of books and tapes to aid you in your study of biblical truth, write Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas 72602, USA. Or request this material by calling 870-741-1119. That's 870-741-1119. Visit our internet website by going to www.kingidentity.com. Type www.kingidentity.com. We invite you to listen regularly to Herald of Truth broadcast for more dynamic messages proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom at this same time and station.